Cristobal is here. There is no doubt about that. The storm now stretches from southeast Minnesota to the Gulf Coast. And action along the storm front in the central and northern plains, that's heating up a lot. It has been a busy weather day, and there's more to come.
Live from tropical northeast Iowa via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we welcome back Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, have you got one of those fun sound buttons that is like a 90-mile-an-hour wind?
Story time.
Oh, no, I was just hoping
that's
for more
wrong
story
one.
Time. I can do one, though.
Yeah, they have had a pile of wind out in the central and northern plains. Some 90-mile-an-hour wind gusts today. It's just absolutely phenomenal. A lot of that happened early this morning, but the wind is still blowing today, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
20 minutes ago, my home was completely dark. My cell service was done, and I was furiously trying. I know the cell service was out because I was furiously trying to text you, Chip. I'm down. I'm down, brother. I don't have time to make it to Sparkle City now.
Oh, no.
But we came back on. We're back online now.
Good.
We'll see what
happens. I hope you stay that way.
I think. Me too.
Yeah. NASDAQ 10,000.
Oh.
The NASDAQ touched 10,000 for the first time. It happened with the Dow off. The Dow is still down about 235 points, but we are seeing some strength the S&P is off about 18 points, so not a lot of strength there, but the NASDAQ is up 52 points and trading at 99.77. So
now
it backed off from the highs, but boy, first time for a NASDAQ 10K.
I want a super quick answer to this question. Sometimes we talk about a market building and then falling back and building and falling back as healthy. Is that the same for the Dow?
This V bottom recovery is something that I just did not anticipate. You know that. I expected it to take a lot of time for this to happen. We have come so far off the lows that this may sound silly, but I still think that there's a big risk that we test those lows that we posted in April.
Really?
Was it March? Whatever. The lows, the COVID lows.
Back down to the 17s, the high 17s in the Dow?
We may have to go back and test those lows.
For crying out loud.
You just can't rule it out.
Okay.
So, okay. And then the grains were on the defensive today. Feeder cattle, they traded to the upside. Some mixed trade in lean hogs. All right, let's get to it. What was moving them around?
Chip, winter wheat harvest was just 7% complete as of Sunday, but it served as a reminder that new crop supplies are coming to the market and put the wheat market on the defensive today. Adding pressure was the ABARES, Australian crop estimate for 2020 and 21. The agency now expects the wheat crop to total 26.7 million metric tons, up sharply from its March estimate of 21.3 million. Traders also said position evening ahead of Thursday's supply and demand report put a cap on price action. July hard red winter wheat, 2¾ cents lower, 487¾. July soft red dropped 7 cents to 504½. July spring wheat, unchanged, 524¼. Chip.
Yeah, some of those really dry areas out in eastern Colorado, western Kansas, picked up a shower. Now, it's probably too late to do a lot of help or a lot of good for that winter wheat crop there, but I think that was part of the reason for the pressure on the market today.
USDA says 97% of the corn crop is planted, 89% has emerged, and 75% of the crop is now rated good to excellent. That's up 1 point from the previous week. The condition of the corn crop is building yield expectations, which weighed on corn prices today. Funds are still heavily on the short side of the corn market, and their willingness to stay short heading into the growing season is making it difficult to build upside price momentum. Traders are looking for some position evening in corn heading into Thursday's supply and demand report. July corn futures were 6.25 cents lower, 327.5. September corn fell 5.25 to 333. December corn closed at 343.25. That one's down 4.25 cents, Chip.
Yeah, we'll talk with Chip Nellinger about what the fund positioning might mean for that market going into Thursday's reports.
Another day without a daily export sales announcement from USDA put the bean market on the defensive. Bean crop conditions also improved in the previous week, with 72% now rated good to excellent. That's up 2 points. Soybeans rated poor to very poor at just 4% is also raising yield expectations, although the bean crop is still about 45 days from the critical yield development period. As with all the grain markets, traders said position evening in beans heading into Thursday's supply and demand report could drain volume from trade. July bean futures were 1.5 cents lower, 863.25. August beans slipped 1.5 cents, 866. November soybean futures closed at 876.5, down 1.5 cents.
All right. You got the breaking news ready to go? All right. This is according to Reuters. Chinese state-owned firms buy at least 2 cargoes U.S. soybeans for December shipment from the U.S. Pacific Northwest. That is according to 2 U.S. traders and reported by Reuters at 2:03 this afternoon. So
wow.
little bit of demand may be coming into the market. Thank you, Megan Vick at Pro Farmer for
for that
tip. All right, hit us with how the market's closed.
Sure. July cotton, 29 points lower, 60.52. Dease cotton off 35, 60.02. August live cattle, 1.47 and a half higher, 97.80. August feeders up 1.17 and a half to 134.25. And here's July hogs off $1, 52.97 and a half, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's have a conversation with Joe Vaclavec, Standard Grain. How you doing, Joe?
Good. What's up, Chip?
Well, a little bit of a defensive tone in the markets today, the grain markets, huh?
Yeah, I think the report on Thursday is going to be, it's going to be a bearish-looking report for the corn especially. USDA probably won't do anything with the yield. If they did do anything, they may increase it based on the crop ratings, but they probably won't do anything there. They're not going to touch acreage. Maybe they mess with demand a little bit, but they're going to spit out some ugly numbers on Thursday. I think we really got to look past that. This dry weather we've got in the forecast about a week out is maybe of a little bit of concern. I know the market's not reacting to it, but that's something you got to pay attention to.
Yeah, I agree, but it's hard to do that when we're getting the rains that we're getting right now in some areas that we're definitely in need of a rain, right?
Yeah, and they are some areas, and there are some areas that have turned drier too, but I just think that if you get into that late June, early July time frame, and you've got a dry forecast, there would be enough shift in sentiment or enough maybe kind of jittery type attitudes for maybe the funds to get out of some of this short position. So I don't know. I'm not going to overcomplicate it. If you get dry weather late June and early July, it's probably helpful.
Gotcha. Okay. Does the headline from Reuters surprise you that the Chinese state-owned firms have bought some beans today?
No, it's not surprising. I think the Brazilian prices or Brazilian beans are going to become exhausted sooner than normal this year. And Brazilian prices have really shot up, partially because they've exported so much already and also because of that big currency move.
Right. All right, Joe. Hey, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, see you, Chip. Bye.
You bet. That is Joe Vaclavec, Standard Grain. Okay, we're going to talk more about this soybean demand. We'll talk more about the weather. We'll talk more about the supply and demand report that's coming our way. We'll do all of that with Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing. That's up next right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk!
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. At least I think he's
still
with me.
Yes. No, I think I'm here too. Pretty sure.
All right. since we gave an update on the equities trade, we've started to move off of those lows that we were talking about. The Dow is now off about a 190. Okay. The NASDAQ is up 65 points and within 10 points of 10,000. So it's trying. Unbelievable, mm-hmm. isn't it?
It really is. Yep.
It's shocking how this NASDAQ has just made the move to all-time highs in here. And it is having a positive influence on other markets around the technology sector. Let's bring in Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. How you doing, Chip?
Doing well. How you doing, Chip?
I'm doing good, doing good. Hey, the technology sector that we were just talking about there, I mean, it's a fascinating move, but in reality, it makes sense because we are all using so much more technology now in this COVID shutdown or stay at home or whatever you want to call it now, that we're kind of not only pulling the future forward, but we're pulling the use of this technology forward. And it's pretty fascinating to watch it happen, isn't it?
It really is. And I think there's some implications that we can draw, from our grain markets as well. I mean, for all intents and purposes, if you think about this rationally on the stock side, and again, I'm not a stock expert here. I'm not pretending to be one. But, you know, in all rationality, with 20%+ unemployment, growth plummeting, businesses closing, more bankruptcies than we've seen in a long, long time, you would expect the stock market to be struggling way more than it is. Trillions of dollars, generated in out of thin air. Eventually, you would think that would become inflationary. And my contention is that maybe that it is inflationary. You're already seeing that in the stock market and the market rallies. You have to follow price. And sometimes when your rational mind gets in the way, it doesn't make sense. And a lot of people miss this rally in the stock market. Very similar things can happen and have happened both up and down in our grain and livestock markets. And I think the stock market here recently is a good case in point that get some simple rules, some simple moving averages, something, a 4-week high or low, some simple rule. And if the market is tipping its hand one way or the other, you better follow price in spite of what you think might be bullish or bearish fundamentals. The market starts moving one way, there's enough money on the sidelines, and it can move a long, long way not much of a good reason rationally.
Right. That is exactly right. And I've not talked about this on the show. This is the first time that I've mentioned this, I think. But this rally in the Dow in particular is just hated. The experts, none of them saw this kind of a rally coming. And they all hate to see it happen because so many of them weren't on board. Well, at some point, they got to decide that it's time to get on board. And that could be the next, accelerant that they dump on this market, Chip. It's pretty crazy.
Absolutely. It's a great case in point of market psychology. And
yep.
I'm not saying the same thing's going to happen in corn, but corn is set up, right? I mean,
sure.
How many people said corn has no chance? It's going to 280, 4 billion bushel carry out. It's in the cards. No rally. Funds have a massive short position right now. I know the Western Corn Belt is the absolute garden spot, as crop conditions indicate, and I think that's some of the pressure you saw today in the corn market, along with some rain in areas. But I'm telling you, the boat is loaded to the short side right now, and it wouldn't take much of a spark. You get the funds wanting out of approximately 250,000 contract short position in corn, and this market could do some things to the upside that maybe shock some people that think there's nowhere to go but down right now in corn because the carryout's going to be massive.
Right, right. You know, talking about the garden spot, we've got Iowa sitting here with 85% of the crop rated good to excellent, just 1% poor. Nebraska, 83% of the crop rated, I'm talking corn, rated good to excellent, 1% rated poor. I don't know, man. These are awfully stout crop conditions, Chip. It's going to take, And I understand that we're talking about the garden spot, but if you're going to have a garden spot, why not have it in the number one and number three corn producing states, right?
Well, exactly. But in my mind, it can't get much better, and there's a lot of room and a lot of time left on the calendar for those conditions in the garden spot of the Western Corn Belt to deteriorate. I'm not saying they're going to, but you know, the bar is set so high that that could be something that becomes a bullish stimulus down the road if some hotter, drier weather were to set up here eventually. And I'm, you know, anyone's guess, but, you know, we're early on in June and we got a lot of growing season ahead of us here.
Yeah, we sure do. We sure do. It just makes those funds comfortable on the short side, though. What is, do you see anything that could be the trigger that says to the funds, listen, the market, it's not going to go down anymore. It's time to get out. Maybe it is just that. Maybe it's just like you were saying, everybody was convinced that it's going to go to 280. We haven't. Is that enough to get these funds to get out of the short positions?
It could very well be. I think you're on the cusp of that. Okay. You know, yesterday was the highest high we've had in corn since April 15th, so a month and a half. And the funds, I'm not saying that they're all technically based, but largely they're technically based. And sometimes it's as simple as that, that when the markets, if you're short and the market stops going down and starts going up and certainly starts making some 4, 5, 6 week highs, they just start pulling the plug. I think if we can get through this report without much bearish damage on Thursday, and close the week strong, you could, have the makings of a better short covering rally. And there's a lot of things that could happen. I've been watching the dollar drop. That's something that's given us some support. We mentioned about the, you know, how high the bar is on the crop conditions in the Western Corn Belt. If you get some hot, dry weather in the forecast, that could be enough to spur them. Some export business from China that on the corn side that maybe it comes unexpectedly. There's several things that could spark them out of this big short position. And on top of that, you got a stocks and acreage report coming up here at the end of June that I think is way more important than this upcoming supply and demand report.
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. In the conversation that we had with Joe Vaclavic in the last segment, as he was talking about beans, I made a couple of notes, and I went back and I looked at him during the break there, Chip, and it's almost like Joe is starting to – he was starting to talk bullish beans. You know, when he said that Brazilian supplies are going to be exhausted earlier than normal and the demand is coming in, and, yeah, I'm not surprised, all that surprised to see some state-owned or some state purchases of U.S. soybeans for new crop delivery. Can you build a bullish case for beans in here right now?
Well, it's a little bit tougher. You certainly can. This is a time of year where we start picking up, more business, from South America, right? We become more competitive in South America as their supplies dwindle. So if we're going to get some export business, this is the sweet spot on the calendar to see that. It's good that China, apparently has been in for some more beans here recently. I think it's a little bit harder of a push because it's set up a little bit differently. The funds are already long slightly in the beans. That doesn't mean they couldn't add on or build a big short position. Weather's going to be an issue. I'm a little bit fearful of this acreage report coming up. I think it'd be pretty easy to pick up some acres in beans.
Oh, okay.
And if China, even though it's good news that China is buying, but they better pick the pace up quickly or especially on the, maybe not so much this report, but July and August, we might see the USDA decreasing demand because it's a pretty high bar they have set on total bean demand. So hopefully China can pick up the ball and run hard with it here and we start seeing some better exports. Or otherwise, we may have a little bit of a headwind from maybe higher acreage and then maybe our demand is set just a little bit too high. That's going to take 2 or 3 months to figure that out, though.
Boy, I don't want to rely on China for anything right now, Chip, including leading the bean demand. They've just been so unpredictable.
Yeah, it's going on 2 years, and every time,
yeah.
I mean, I can show you a half a dozen at least times where the market is set up like this. You finally turn the corner, you know, maybe at a month high, you got the moving average starting to cross for higher, and you think, oh, maybe we finally have a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and then there's a tweet or a news story, and all of a sudden the rug gets pulled out. So I agree with you. It's hard to trust the bean market. That doesn't mean I think they could rally 30, 40 cents very easily with the right news, but boy, it's hard to trust them yep. very far when you got to rely on China.
That's exactly right. We are talking with Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing today. When we get back, any positioning that needs to happen between now and 11 o'clock Central Time on Thursday morning. That's going to be the next topic. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, French soft wheat acres are expected to be lower in the year ahead. The EPA says that farmers can use existing dicamba stocks until July 31 if in possession on June 3rd. We had a great conversation about that on AgriTalk this morning. So if you need some info on that, be sure to go to the AgriTalk app and get the download there. Lawmakers are urging Trump to deny requests to waive RFS requirements. The U.S. is entered a recession in February, ending a record-setting expansion streak, and the World Bank calls for the deepest global recession since World War II. Finally, the pandemic has nearly quadrupled the federal deficit for the fiscal year. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That is Davis. We're talking with Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing today. Before we get back to that conversation,
yes.
though... Yes. Let's get a recap of how the markets closed from Davis.
Well, Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 2¾ cents lower, 487¾. July soft red dropped 7 cents to 504½. July corn futures were 6¼ lower, 327½. December corn closed at 343¼. That one's down 4¼ cents today. July soybean futures a penny and a half lower, 863¼. November bean futures closed at 876½, down a penny and a half. July cotton, 29 points lower, 60.52. On the livestock side, December cattle firmed 50 cents to 104.17½. August feeders gained $1.17½ to 134.25. And December lean hogs up 67½ to 55.95. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
Okay, so you know how you call yourself the handsome newsman?
That's right.
Yeah. Know, I think, did you notice that Randy Francis is trying to give you a new nickname today?
No. Do yes. I need to open my Twitter here quick? All right.
I'm thinking that he wants your nickname to be El Queso.
El Queso. Which, of course, is Spanish for the potato chip, if I'm not mistaken, right?
No, I think you're wrong. I think that's like cheese.
Cheese. El Queso.
To go along with all the chips. On today's, you see how he does that? Isn't he smart?
I got it.
Bring in Chip Nellinger. I mean,
you know what? We have the most clever, intelligent, quick-witted audience of anybody ever to have ever broadcasted before. I'm convinced of that, Chip.
I think you're right. Okay, so I think you are right.
See.
All right, Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. It's like I said at the end of the last segment, for corn and for soybean guys right now, and I mean, we could dream up a million different scenarios of this much is left in the bin, that much has already been moved, blah, blah. And we can dream up 100 new crop scenarios too, but are you feeling urgency to remove some downside price risk going into the reports on Thursday?
No, I don't. I think you have to go back to our normal seasonal, you know, the uncertainty of the next 6 to 8 weeks of weather as we go through some key, you know, production periods on corn and beans here. That uncertainty should provide a little bit of support and a little bit of floor to us. So I'm not super concerned about minimizing immediate downside risk. I think you got to use the calendar a little bit and price. So if you can get a little bit of a spark and get the funds wanting to buy some beans and extend that long position and get out of some of these shorts in corn, I think that there is some upside. And then, you know, those rallies maybe back up towards $9 on November beans, maybe back up towards the low 360s to as much as 370 on December corn, maybe opens up an opportunity to talk about doing something there. I think on the other side of that, though, it's an interesting paradox from a crop insurance perspective, right? Because
right.
we all want higher prices, but the worst place to be come October is about 370 December corn futures. So this, you know, it's almost tempting to, on this little break that we've seen now that we finally stabilized and shown a little signs of life in the corn market, maybe think about picking away at a few out of the money calls, just in case we would rally out of a crop insurance payment. So I think crop insurance has to be in the consideration as well, and that's obviously a case by case scenario. You know, certainly different for each operation.
Right, right, yeah. We've talked about it on the show a couple of times, Chip, and I never want to be accused of rooting for lower prices. That's just not in my DNA. It's not how I operate.
It's I agree with you. It's really
but
a bizarre situation to, you know, we want to. How about this, Chip? Let's rally to $4, maybe July 15th.
Okay.
And then come October, let's be about 280. We'll get it all priced at $4. We'll have that crop insurance, you know, maybe a 290 average.
Yep.
And we'll double dip with a crop insurance payment, good yields, and a good price to sell. Let's root for that.
And that lower price is going to make us that much more competitive in the export market, making sure that we can get to that $14.8 billion in total demand for the 2020-21 marketing year.
That'll work. I've also heard anecdotally that a couple Far Eastern Corn Belt ethanol plants coming back online. That's really welcome news in my mind. So I was really concerned about that demand side, but our exports have been decent. And, you know, in my mind, we're seeing this ethanol come back to life a little quicker than what my worst case fears were.
Yeah, yeah. And the overwhelming attitude on the ethanol side of things and demand picture for gasoline, for ethanol, has been that, boy, there's going to be a lot of empty space, office space in downtown locations, because we are using the technology that is available to us, and there won't be as much commuting going on. But now we're starting to hear things like there may not be as many commuters going to downtown locations, but those that are going are probably going to be driving more than using public transportation. So I don't know if that is enough to offset the lost demand from fewer people going downtown, but it's something that we need to consider and keep a close eye on going forward. If you let this fuel thing get away from you too far to the downside and don't encourage some additional production, we could end up in a bit of a crunch later this summer or early fall.
Yeah, and I think the fall time frame is going to be important, that we don't see, you know, a resurgence of the virus and, you know, some additional lockdowns, stuff like that. If we can get through the fall and, you know, early part of the winter without much of a resurgence, I think things bode much better. But, it's uncharted territory with this deal. And, you know, obviously the ethanol and gasoline usage is going to be a big part of that. And maybe with some of these prices, you know, I think the one bright spot is maybe we've seen a little bit of a resurgence in some exports of, you know, not only our crude oil, but ethanol as well. So low prices definitely stimulate demand, and let's hope that we're making some headway and creating some new markets for some U.S. energy products as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the environmental argument is stronger and stronger all the time for ethanol. And I think that that's going to be an important part of the conversation going forward as well. I don't know if that is enough to get us over the top and get everybody using ethanol the way that we want them to use ethanol at an E15 minimum blend. But boy, Chip, that would certainly help, I think, going forward. So what else are you looking at in these markets, Chip? What else do you feel like we might be missing?
Oh, I think more than anything, and maybe even more than the fundamental picture, is this dollar situation. And, okay. You know, the dollar, obviously, at the start of this whole, virus shutdown quarantine issue, had some massive swings, mostly higher, and then went sideways for the better part of 4 months. We've really seen the dollar weaken up over the last 2 weeks. We're at some pretty, in my mind, critical support areas. You see much more weakness in the dollar. I think it could build on itself. And obviously that becomes a friendly situation for commodities. So, if you saw a big enough break in the dollar, in spite of even big crops, that could be kind of the tide that lifts all ships. So I think we really need to keep a close eye on the dollar. And it, more than anything, may spur some of this short covering in the corn market if it would continue lower.
Yeah, the Brazilian real has rallied like 20-some percent from its lows. The same story for the Russian ruble. It's just making us that much more competitive in the export markets out there. I'd like, boy, if wheat could take advantage of a stronger ruble right now and get some on the books for the 2020-21 marketing year, If wheat could perk up, I think it would help that the bull case in corn too.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally. Okay. I have in the back of my mind too a little bit of hope that we, as we get deeper into harvest, particularly into Kansas, that we had two frost events here in the Eastern Corn Belt. They had at least one. They've been fighting really hot, dry weather as well in Western Kansas. I think it could be a situation where yields disappoint a little bit the further north that harvest pushes, and maybe cause a little bit of a counter seasonal type of a rally that maybe wheat can rally right through the middle of harvest, take out some key technical levels. The funds, they're back with basically flat to slightly net short in the wheat, and it wouldn't take a whole lot, again, with this dollar continuing to drop, to make us competitive. See a nice rally in wheat, and that'll take some of the pressure off of the corn market as well. I agree 100%.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. All right, buddy. Hey, we're almost out of time here. I hope everything has been going well for you over there.
It is. I tell you what, crops look a little ragged, and we had we could use some a little bit of rain, which we're getting. The sun's been good and warmer temperatures. But this crop over here, certainly, you guys are certainly in the sweet spot over there. The Eastern Corn Belt is a little ragged looking on the corn crop right now.
Yep, it's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on, no doubt about it. 10% of the Illinois crop rated poor to very poor. So we need to watch that. Chip, it was good to talk with you. Thanks, man.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
All right, that's Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. When we come back, Davis and I will put a wrap on today's second hour of AgriTalk.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
You know, they say Bruce Lee's hands were so fast that you couldn't see them.
Right, right.
I wonder if...
You understand that the listeners can't hear our conversation that we have during the break?
I just assume they're all plugged into the conversation in my head, because I've been watching a lot of kung fu.
Okay.
I decided it's a genre that I had not taken in nearly enough of. Truthfully, that's kind of what I've been doing with some of my extra time, is watching and working out a little bit. I find it helps to have kung fu on the TV in the workout laboratory while you're working out.
You have got to fire up the video on your phone and get me some of that.
Oh, you'd love it. It's fantastic. Yeah. I understand Bruce Lee hurt himself. He hurt his back. Here's the story I heard from Chuck Norris. He hurt his back lifting weights with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Wait, is it? Yeah? What time is it?
It's any time right now.
Could it
it's
be
any
story time.
Time?
Could it be story time?
Story time.
So according to according to Chuck Norris, Bruce Lee ruptured a disc or did something to his back while he was lifting weights with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And you said you had recently seen the ESPN story about Bruce Lee. I haven't seen that.
Right. Right.
But I've been on the YouTube, you know. And apparently he was on pain pills, and then he went back to Hong Kong, I believe it was, and they gave him some pain meds there, and it interacted with the medication he had gotten here in the States, and it ruptured something in his brain or something, and the poor guy died.
Right, right.
That's freaking tragic.
32 years old, I think he was.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, with two children. Yeah, it's a very tragic story.
Had he been around for Times to Change just a little bit, there's no telling what that guy could have accomplished.
Oh,
I'm a
absolutely.
Fan. I'm a Bruce Lee fan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I am too.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Stackler chiming in there with the me too. So yesterday, Davis, I think it was in this segment, we were talking about that there was going to be some questions to be answered if we don't see a spike in COVID-19 cases coming out of, you know, I threw out there the Ozarks
Well, and you took a little heat for that
down there. Yep.
Comment.
I threw out the protests, the riots, and everything. And not as if there weren't already enough chips in the conversation today. I'm going to throw another one in.
There's never enough chip.
This is a listener from the West Coast.
Okay? Oh, hello, West Coast. Yes.
Yeah, and I've used his comments before. Okay, and his name is Chip. Mm-hmm. He sent me an email. It says, "Why did we shelter in place?" And his the opening sentence, the opening few words are, it's like one of those, ugh, duh, because nobody knew what would happen. That's why we sheltered in place. Mm-hmm. And now that we have gone through the shelter in place, and we know more about the disease, and we have, or the virus, I should say, we know more about the virus. We know more about the therapeutics that work to help keep someone that is infected off a ventilator, because that is obviously very important.
Yes.
But if we can do that, if we can get through the next couple of weeks and not have a spike, I think it accelerates this economic recovery. And okay. if that happens, Davis, is it a V? I've been saying that I didn't think a V could happen.
I know. But I know you have.
But dang, if we spike to that March low with the Dow just over 18,000 at the low, and then all of a sudden, you know, here we are, we've already got the bounce in the Dow. What was it, 27,000, something like that? Is that where we're at? 27,260, 270 right now. So we've already got this huge bounce off of the COVID low. That's about as V as you can get. I'm just concerned that if it does turn into a W, it's going to be a really wild ride to go back down and test that low or come close to testing that low. The volatility that would result from that might be heart-wrenching for a lot of people.
I'm hearing more and more about the potential of a second wave. If people aren't horribly sickened from sort of throwing, you know, caution to the wind for these protests, for these demonstrations, these riots and stuff, how willing is the American public going to be to lock down if there is a second wave? If they have that to point back to and say, hey, look, our July was fantastic. Everybody was fine.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
And so I don't know if if that allows us, you know, the sort of negativity in the marketplace, the whatever, to push us back down to that 18,000 in the Dow or not. I don't know. That's kind of where I sit. Mm-hmm. And I don't, can I just say the disclaimer? We and those who employ us do not wish to see people get sick. It's not what we're rooting for.
No.
But and you're right. The way they set it up, there is a certain level of expectation, though, the way that they set it up, that, gosh, maybe somebody's going to get sick from this.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
That is exactly right. Hey, both Joe Vaclavic and Chip Nellinger mentioned the dry weather.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And when you look at the radar today, and we want to be talking about dry weather, it's a little difficult to do that. But the 6 to 10 day outlook, June 15th through the 19th, has got above normal temperatures expected over most of the Corn Belt. Indiana, Ohio, Southern Illinois are the exception on that, where below normal normal temperatures are expected. But we've got below normal precipitation June 15th through the 19th across the entire Corn Belt. So after this rainy period, then the heat and the dryness comes in, and it sticks for the 8 to 14 day, June 17th through the 23rd, too. Mm-hmm. So heat and dry conditions for the second half of the month is what it looks like. All right. Hey, for Bruce Lee fans, Davis, and producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening to today. Tomorrow morning, we've got Randy Dickhoot from Farmers National, Rock from Illinois, Dennis from Iowa in the Farmer Forum. And tomorrow afternoon, Matt Campbell, INTL, FC Stone, here on AgriTalk.